A Benson diary, and it starts as usual with a poem. While one in dumps broods on a corner stool, their elder daughter doomed to the worst of fate, who made one slip in love and played the fool, and since condemned to live without a mate. No youth again courts once bizarre Kate, though hopes of sweethearts still perplex her head, and charmed to try by gypsies told of late from table slives unseen and onion red, to dream at Martinmas with whom she is to wed. And that's St. Martin's, or Martin's Eve by John Clare. The happy incident of being here in Martinstown in Dorset provides the substance of my Benson diary this month. Although we arrived here in sheeting rain, since it has been nothing but blue skies. The village sits a few miles outside the other Dorchester to ours, about 9 miles from Weymouth, near to Maiden Castle. It nestles at the hub of wonderful walking country. The village itself is charming, stone cottages with mainly slate roofs and a stream running through its length. There are some grander houses from the elegant decades of the early 19th century, and a manor house hidden behind a high stone wall. It has a village pub with great food and a towered church dedicated to St. Martin. There's a winsome tiny library housed in a red phone box and a popular vending point dispensing local milk and egg and cheese. From our house, it's a mile uphill through the farm that supplies the vending machine to the Southwest Ridgeway Path, which offers a staggeringly beautiful panorama of the west coast, of the coast from Weymouth and to Portland. That same footpath trails over hill and dale to Hardy's monument. That's Vice Admiral Hardy of Nelson's famed last words, and not Thomas Hardy, who brought this part of England to life in his novels. From this Portland stone monument, footpaths multiply with some winding down towards Chesil Beach. Along the way, there are sheep recently shorn. There are cows aplenty grazing in the lush grassland and dotted along Dorset's undulating hills. Some are even of that longhorn variety, more common in the Scottish Highlands. They chew steadily and stare carefree into the untroubled horizons of their wild green wander, yonder. Of course, as herds of animals do, they can move suddenly, and en masse, which can be a bit alarming when you've got dogs in tow, crossing open country on public rights of way. Still, we've now negotiated our way through many fields unscathed. Both our dogs have been in seventh heaven on these hilly meanderings, even if their rolling in fresh cow poo feels more like one of the many circles of hell. Nearby, there's Abbotsbury, another charming village with many thatched stone cottages and a rather grand late medieval church. Further on, there's the pebbled glory of Chesil Beach. Weymouth is also nearby, and by way of contrast, it has a gloriously sandy beach. It also possesses many memories of my childhood, many as indistinct as frothy foam, from breaking waves on soft cream sand, whose gentle repetitions, almost philosophically, mark that rise and fall of those more uncertain tides in the affairs of men. We used to visit family and friends in Weymouth in the summers of the 1960s. Mum and Dad met them in Harlow when we first arrived in England. Patsy and Scott had moved up from Dorset. Patsy and my mum lived a few houses from each other. Both families were Catholic, and both women somewhat homesick. In the uncertainties of Harlow's brave new world, they struck up a friendship that would last all their lifetimes. In time, Patsy, Scott, and their four children moved back to Weymouth, much as we moved on eventually to Maidenhead, where I grew up. For many years, we shared summer holidays in Weymouth. It was there I saw Mary Poppins on one rainy afternoon when building sandcastles was out of the question. I had just left primary school, and it was a summer of trepidation as I waited to go to Presentation College in Reading. How distant this all now feels from the rocky promontories of my 70s. Martinstown sounds as if it might be an island, but it's Dorset born and bred. The Martin in question is St. Martin of Tours, a 4th century Roman soldier who famously cut his cloak in two with his sword so he could give half to a beggar he met on the road. Later it was said he had a vision of Christ wearing that same half cloak. Martin became a Christian and was later made Bishop of Tours. His lifetime coincided with the emergence of Christianity as the religion of Imperial Rome. He became emblematic of that cultural and political change. A bit like Mother Teresa in recent times, Martin's fame had spread far and wide in his own lifetime. For the better part of a millennium, he was a highly revered figure. Many churches were named for him, and his relics were much sought after for their miraculous properties. Hagiographical accounts of his life quickly passed into legend. He became particularly associated with winemaking, and pruning of vines was attributed to his intervention, although the practice was known before to the ancient Greeks. He was buried on the 11th of November 397. This became his feast day. Martin Mass was kept throughout Europe on the 11th of November as a major holiday. Its celebration had bonfires, games, mummers, music and storytelling. In some parts of Europe, there were hog roasts on village greens or town squares. More generally, in England and Scandinavia, goose or duck was served as a celebratory dish of the feast day. In England, Guy Fawkes bonfires replaced those of St. Martin, and after 1918, the war dead appropriated his remembrance. However, as John Clare's touching pastoral evokes, those unquiet ghosts from the dead past of the Middle Ages still haunted country traditions beyond the 1820s. And that's John Murphy, and he finishes with a poem. And here the muse might put her bonnet by, and in her apron lay her reed at rest, and her rush-bottomed chair be hitching nigh to be an hour the rude assembly's guest. Each rude recited tale and simple jest, to listen to that fails not them to please or urge the laugh. If patience she possessed to bear the rudeness of such tribes as those wild as those of the old house neath their forest trees.